Thanks for listening to Star Lores. If you like the show, please consider subscribing and giving a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also help us make more great content by becoming a patron at www.patreon.com. We would also love to hear from you on social media. You can follow Star Lores on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Enjoy the show, and may the Force be with you.
You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Reckless is he. Now, matters are worse.
That boy is our last hope.
No, there is another.
From her birthplace on Polis Massa, Republic Senator Bail Organa took Leia to Alderaan, where he and his wife, Queen Breha Organa, adopted her. Obi-Wan Kenobi took Luke to Tatooine in secret. 19 years passed before the twins were reunited. Leia's adoptive parents were less evasive than Luke's with respect to her parentage, but the issue played a smaller part in her upbringing than it did for his. Leia had no fallen hero narrative with which to idolize parents who could never disappoint her. The planets on which the Skywalker twins grew up contrast each other sharply. Alderaan was a lush, blue-green gem of a world in the galactic core, known across the galaxy as the Planet of Beauty. Tatooine, on the other hand, located in the Outer Rim, was blasted by the radiation of two suns, covered in sand, and economically depressed and ruled by criminals. To the extent that it was known across the galaxy, it was for being a dust-covered, dead-end, backwater planet with one good pod racing track.
Alderaan's scenic geography consisted of a snow-capped mountain ranges, green hills, and many lakes and inland seas. The flora and fauna were diverse and abundant. Presumably, Alderaan's biodiversity was irrevocably lost when it was destroyed, but charismatic megafauna, such as the Thranta, were kept alive off-world in isolated enclaves. The infamous Nerf, which you don't want to be scruffy herder of, is also a native Alderaanian. Like her brother, Leia was eager for independence and adventure during her youth, but she did not have the same anywhere but here kind of motivation as Luke. She didn't want to escape a grim future of heat, dust, and boredom. For Leia, it was her sense of justice combined with an instinct to buck against authority that thrust her into the pages of galactic history. Luke wanted to escape Tatooine for himself, while Leia wanted to escape the court of Alderaan for others. It was from Queen Breha that Leia inherited her title as Princess of Alderaan. Like her father Bail, her political position in the Empire was earned through popular vote. The planet's government was a constitutional monarchy and made use of democratic processes. With the world's destruction, Leia technically became queen, as Bail and Breha died by the Death Star's superlaser, along with millions of their subjects. Alderaan's involvement in democracy goes back at least as far as the beginning of the Old Republic, as it was one of the founding worlds of that government. It is no surprise that a planet with such a deep historic connection to the galactic democracy sought to restore it in the days of the Empire, and produced so many rebel heroes. Prominent Alderaanians who opposed Palpatine's imperialist reforms to the Republic were the Organa family, Winter Kelchu, Mon Mothma, and the Antilles family. Bail Organa, together with Mon Mothma, were founding members of the Rebellion to Restore the Republic, commonly known as the Rebellion. Palpatine's restructuring of the Galactic Republic into the Galactic Empire was gradual, beginning with the granting of extended emergency powers. It took a full 19 years before Palpatine finished with the complete excision of any democratic process when he dissolved the Imperial Senate. With this act, Palpatine revealed himself to be an irredeemable enemy of freedom in rebel eyes. To them, violence was the only chance democracy had to reestablish itself in the galaxy. The Galactic Civil War escalated massively. With Leia's involvement in the rebellion, Alderaan surely would have become one of the first member worlds of the New Republic as well, had circumstances not prevented it.
Leia inherited Force sensitivity from her father, the fallen Jedi Knight Anakin Skywalker. Her Force abilities manifested as a toddler. She saved a caretaker by throwing a laser ball at a weak railing the woman was about to lean on. Without Leia's precocious lightning reflexes and thinking, the railing would have broken, thus tipping the woman to a fatal fall. This manifestation brought unwanted attention from Coruscant, and agents of the Inquisitors were dispatched to investigate rumors of a special child on Alderaan. Their investigation was ultimately unsuccessful, and decades passed before Leia learned of her inherited Force sensitivity. Life on Alderaan afforded Leia a rigorous formal education. She studied academics and etiquette at several institutions across Alderaan, and even received combat training. Starting in primary school, Leia's penchant for rebellion developed into something more than childish willfulness when she developed the kind of charisma that could send cowards bold-faced into battle. On one occasion, rankled over the quality of beverages served in the school cafeteria, Leia organized a sit-in protest with the other seven-year-olds. This was only the beginning of the princess's long career of subverting authority figures and dismantling power structures from within. Leia's growing rebellious heart grew to astronomical proportions and would change the course of galactic history. The princess had a happy family life and many close relationships, but she often felt like an outsider. She gravitated towards adventure and action, doing her best to eschew the stuffy life of routine and protocol provided by her noble station. This created minor tension between herself, her parents, and her tutors. She grew to have contempt for many of her affluent school acquaintances when they demonstrated disdain for common people. Her peers' callous attitude towards the downtrodden stoked the embers of justice and rebellion smoldering inside the princess. That keen sense of justice led her to join the rebellion after witnessing several times how unfairly the Empire acted towards its citizens. Leia grew up at the bosom of privilege due to her loyal pedigree, and yet did not conform to the rigid norms of her social strata. Though he never openly spoke to Leia about his activities with the fledgling rebellion or his true political ideals, Bail did nothing to prevent Leia from becoming radicalized. He was likely pleased that she had come to the same conclusions as he with respect to the Empire, without formal indoctrination. Leia met Grand Moff Tarkin at 13 years of age and was disgusted by his participation in slavery. In her adventures with the Rebellion, she saw firsthand Imperial oppression on dozens of worlds, and the motif of an Imperial despot commanding slaves occurred several times throughout her terrorist career.
Darth Vader, only you could be so bold.
The Imperial Senate will not sit still for this. When they hear you've attacked a diplomatic...
Don't act so surprised, Your Highness. You weren't on any mercy mission this time. Several transmissions were beamed to the ship by rebel spies. I want to know what happened to the plans they sent you.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm a member of the Imperial Senate on a diplomatic mission to Alderaan.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor. Take her away!
Six years after meeting Tarkin, Leia was elected as an Imperial Senator. She was the youngest senator ever, at 18 Galactic Standard years old. At that time, she received an audience with Emperor Palpatine and Darth Vader. Though she wanted to advocate for her constituents with respect to the Empire's abuse, she could only mutter the platitudes that constituted proper court behavior. For as bold and outspoken person as Leia, such reticence was out of character. It was only the mellifluous power of the dark side emanating from Palpatine and his nearby brutal enforcer Darth Vader, which oppressed her into near silence. The decrepit and ghoulish figure of the Emperor in his black robes and time-ravaged flesh, alongside the cybernetic specter of death, Darth Vader, were not congenial conversation partners. This was only her first encounter with Vader, and relative to their future engagements, was the most pleasant. Bail never explicitly sent Leia down the path of violence and insurrection, but he was sure to have her trained extensively in martial arts and firearms, making that path easy for her to follow. These active, exciting lessons were the aspect of her education which she enjoyed most. This enthusiasm for combat, combined with her latent force sensitivity, may explain how such a relatively young and inexperienced soldier fought as successfully as she did against superior enemies so many times. During her brief tenure as an Imperial Senator, Leia saw the misery that the Empire spread throughout the galaxy and began to subvert it by working with the Rebel Alliance. Those who knew the Strident Princess well, like her adoptive father, were not surprised and were even proud of her subversive activity. She worked from within the Empire to sabotage Imperial efforts. However, her treachery would be uncovered by Darth Vader when he captured her in orbit above Tatooine. Leia traveled frequently on board the Tantive IV, a ship first used by her father on relief missions during the Clone Wars. Part of Leia's entourage aboard the ship were the neurotic protocol droid C-3PO and his idiosyncratic astromech counterpart R2-D2. Both droids also served Leia's parents and continued to serve Leia and Luke in the years that followed the Galactic Civil War. While C-3PO's memory was wiped after the Clone Wars, R2-D2's was not. Galactic historians can only speculate about the valuable intelligence R2-D2 stored in his databanks about Darth Vader before he assumed that title and identity. R2 spent most of the Clone Wars at Anakin's side and was likely privy to a great deal of insight about the war criminal's life that has never been revealed. It was not unusual for an Imperial Senator to travel on a ship like the Tantive, and Leia used her senatorial obligations as a smokescreen for her clandestine work with the Rebels. Leia's cousin, Winter Kelchu, captained the Tantive until its capture by Darth Vader's Star Destroyer in Zero ABY. The idyllic world of Alderaan had a reputation for being peaceful, especially compared to the hostile galaxy surrounding it. Leia proclaimed in Alderaan's defense to Moff Tarkin, moments before its destruction, that they had no defenses or military. The destruction of her home planet and her entire family had a deep effect on the princess. She grieved the loss of her homeworld for years afterward.
I have placed information vital to the survival of the rebellion into the memory systems of this R2 unit. My father will know how to retrieve it. You must see this droid safely delivered to him on Alderaan. This is our most desperate hour. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
One of the most important things Leia did for the Rebellion was obtaining the plans for the first Death Star. The schematics exposed a vulnerability which X-Wing fighters could exploit, thus destroying the Space Fortress. That mission would not have been completed without the help of her fledgling Jedi brother, Luke Skywalker. Nor would Leia have escaped imprisonment on the Death Star without him. The relatively inexperienced siblings developed a habit of getting captured by enemy forces during the rebellion. Some scholars have proposed that the survival of the Skywalkers through so many prisoners of war scenarios was possible only through the metaphysical intervention of the Force. After meeting aboard the Death Star, the Skywalker twins developed a psychic link through the Force and at various times heard the thoughts of their siblings across vast distances. Leia developed more uncanny abilities in time, seeing Force ghosts first in 4ABY, and eventually greatly strengthened her connection with the Force. Although they did not know they were siblings at the time, the Force seemed to draw them together.
It was alongside Luke and Captain Han Solo that Leia engaged in some of her most dangerous rebel activities. Solo's customized smuggling freighter, the Millennium Falcon, became her de facto flagship. Despite constantly denigrating the Falcon's spaceworthiness and general state of apparent disrepair, she spent a lot of time aboard the vessel, and even learned to perform maintenance on it. Also, despite her low opinion of the ship, it performed amazingly well throughout the rebellion, and continued to perform for decades after. Throughout her career, Leia demonstrated combat proficiency with a large arsenal that included the E-11 blaster, lightsabers, DL-11 heavy blaster pistol, sporting pistol, hand-to-hand combat, and stone-throwing axes. From 0 to 4 ABY, when the rebellion was at its largest and most violent, Leia operated on the ground, in space as often as not, with Luke, Han, C-3PO, and Chewie on dozens of dangerous operations. Though she was a skilled politician and military strategist, Leia saw combat alongside the soldiers of the rebellion many times. By the end of the Galactic Civil War, the aristocrat became a hardened combat veteran. 2 years ABY, Luke and Leia crash-landed on the swamp world of Mimban, en route to a diplomatic mission to neighboring Sercapus IV. Due to its natural resources, Mimban's indigenous inhabitants were suffering under the heel of imperial exploitation. The Mimbanese natives were a reptosapien species of high intelligence which exhibited two distinct cultural groups, the green-skinned and enslaved, and the more tribal-resistant red-skinned cultures. At the time of Leia and her brother visiting the world, the green-skinned natives were enslaved by the Empire. The Empire used Mimbanese labor to accomplish their mining objectives on the world, as well as other menial tasks such as serving food. Violence against the natives by the Imperials was not only tolerated, but encouraged by command. Leia could not stay out of trouble on a world like that for long, and the incognito rebels were soon trapped in a cycle of violence with stormtroopers and other Imperial officers. The mining industry and security on Mimban were commanded by the sadistic Captain Supervisor Grommel. Under Grommel's custody, Luke learned what an Imperial interrogation entailed, just as Leia had aboard the Death Star. Grommel threatened Luke with a sequence of baroque and grotesque torture methods, each more foul than the preceding. The novice Jedi refused to yield and eventually escaped, severing Grommel's arm and scarring his face with a lightsaber. Grommel would soon be mutilated again by a lightsaber-wielding off-worlder, with fatal results for his failure in allowing Skywalker's escape. In perhaps her most impressive combat engagement, Leia dueled Vader with Luke's lightsaber, and even managed to injure him in the crumbling ruins of the Temple of Pomajima. Considering Vader's experience, training, equipment, size, and raw force power, Leia was not the odds-on favorite to survive a confrontation with Vader, let alone get the better of him temporarily. She successfully fought a few ripostes against the superior warrior, giving Luke enough time to escape from underneath a pile of rubble. When not flitting about the galaxy, blasting stormtroopers and liberating the oppressed, Leia spent her time at the rebel headquarters on Yavin, and then in space with the rebel fleet when they abandoned the jungle moon. The rebels relocated their headquarters to Hoth, and on that icy globe, she directed the rebellion until the base's discovery and destruction by the Empire in 3 ABY. After the Battle of Yavin, Leia and other agents of the rebellion searched the galaxy for a world remote enough to make headquarters on. One such world was inhabited by close family friends of the Organas, the Pantiers. The Pantiers, like the Organas, were one of the great houses of Alderaan, and so had sufficient resources to relocate to the site of their vacation villa on an otherwise uninhabited moon in the Ryloth system. Exotic animals from all corners of the galaxy that the Pantyrs kept on a game preserve was the Thranta. The sight of the massive membrane-winged flying lizard evoked a powerful emotional response from Leia, reminding her of everything that she would never see again from her homeworld. Despite having a common enemy in the Empire, Leia could not convince Ral Pantyr to allow the rebels to take refuge on his moon, and his brother was killed on an excursion in the game preserve. Leia returned to the rebel fleet dejected, having seen yet another small part of Alderaan die. Leia had a close working relationship with General Jen Dodonna and Mon Mothma. Being mentored in military tactics by the former and in political guile by the latter, it must have been like losing a parent all over again when General Dodonna went down with his ship in a space battle opposite Darth Vader. While on a rebel mission with Han aboard the Falcon, Leia got caught in a ransom scheme for the princess Mi, and protected the kidnapped princess from bounty hunters. On several more occasions throughout her career, Leia had dangerous interactions with bounty hunters and their less than reputable employers. Leia aided Lando Calrissian and Chewbacca in a daring rescue, saving Luke with the Falcon as he clung for life on a weather vane on the underside of Cloud City. Unfortunately, Leia was unable to save Han Solo, who was transported off of Bespin by the bounty hunter Boba Fett. It was around this time that Leia gained clarity about her feelings for Captain Solo. To the outside observer, the relationship until this time appeared contentious at best, and one of true animus at work. Perhaps this is because of an attraction that she felt towards him, but was unwilling to explore due to her dedication to the rebel cause. As Han was about to be frozen in carbonite, she resolved the tension between them with a kiss, and an admission of her love for the man.
Leia would not allow her lover to languish on the macabre wall of a slimy crime boss. In order to discover where Solo was delivered by Boba Fett, Leia delved deep into the galaxy's underworld. There she confronted Prince Sejor, the leader of the galaxy's ultimate crime syndicate, Black Sun. At the time, Vader and Palpatine were the only people more powerful than Sejor in the entire galaxy. Leia was not charmed by the prince, nor his powerful pheromone ability, though he came close. Instead of receiving her embrace, Sejor received a sharp knee to the groin, and Leia escaped, having learned what she needed from Black Sun. During the rescue of Han Solo from Jabba's palace, the crime boss saw through Leia's Ubi's bounty hunter disguise. Once again, the princess was imprisoned by a cruel despot. By this time, Leia had effectively been a prisoner of war many times. It is hard to know what psychological damage she suffered from spending so much time in captivity, but it is interesting that this is a pattern which repeats many times throughout Luke, Leia, and Han's lives. Some combination of the trio is kidnapped, only to be rescued later by one of the others. The three rebel heroes are some of the most psychologically resilient individuals imaginable, considering how much trauma they suffered during their many periods of incarceration, and how little psychopathology is apparent in their biographies. For the Skywalkers, this resilience may be part of their Force aptitude, and for Han, perhaps it is his rather infamous luck. In Jabba's palace, Leia was made to wear revealing clothing in the fashion of Jabba's other female slaves. While it is not clear how long Leia spent wearing nothing but chains and a few scraps of leather and a brassy medal, it had to have been at least an hour from Jabba's palace to the pit of Carcoon. It was not a comfortable afternoon for her. No doubt Jabba's warm, wrinkled, moist flesh made the experience that much worse, chained to Jabba's immediate proximity as she was. With the help of a distraction provided by Luke, When they arrived at the pit, Leia was able to strangle Jabba to death using the very chains in which he had bound her. The physical strength required to constrict such a large air and blood passageway as Jabba had is impressive and may point to the manifestation of another latent force ability. Leia started the Battle of Yavin off with a commando mission with Luke, Han, and Chewbacca to destroy the shield generator for the second Death Star, thereby making it vulnerable to attack from the Rebel Armada. While on this mission, Leia was captured again by a pugnacious tribe of Ewoks. Her hosts on Endor were much more accommodating than Jabba's court or the Death Star's crew. The miniature Ursine Sapien native Ewoks recognized Leia and C-3PO as a deity from their religious tradition, and they assisted the rebels in their operation on Endor. After the Battle of Endor, Leia revealed to Han that she was pregnant by him and saw the Force ghost of Anakin Skywalker, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Yoda. Shortly after the Battle of Endor, Leia and Han were married. The Galactic Civil War concluded, but Leia's galactic heroics had barely begun. Right, guys, so to start off our discussion for this episode, I have a pretty weird digression. So something I found, there is some Star Wars story in the Legends canon where Leia is sent back in time 8,000 years with a bunch of stormtroopers and then comes back to Yavin base in the appropriate timeline. But my question about this, and this is always my question with science fiction time travel stories, is that if time travel is possible, there's like the infinite divergence problem, right? Where you're creating all of these different possible histories that are unfolding because you're going back in time and messing with things.
And every decision creates like a divergence and another divergence in every...
Exactly.
Yeah. A butterfly effect.
So my theory is... My fan theory that I'm starting, and I hope our listeners elaborate more on this, is that part of the reason why the story of the new Star Wars trilogy is so bad is because of that time travel that Leia did 8,000 years ago. And so there's two competing realities, and there's the extended universe Legends one, which we love and we're focusing on. And that's the good one with, I'm not sure if this is the timeline that Leia interfered with or if this is the timeline that was supposed to happen. I'm going to say that it's the timeline that was supposed to happen. Yeah. That's one we have because I actually hate time travel stories in science fiction. I think they're always really dumb. But so that's where I'm putting my nickel down is that... The storyline of the new Star Wars movies is because of Leia's...
Divergence.
Yeah. Divergence. What do you guys think about that theory?
You know what? There's actually a couple other theories too in the new Disney canon. There is an element of time travel in the Star Wars Rebels TV show. Now, I actually haven't gotten around to watching it yet. But it's my understanding that there's like a... almost like a time travel portal... almost like a neutral space between timelines. So it's almost kind of confirmed in the Disney canon anyways that time travel is possible in that regard. And that's what some theories were, that like one timeline is like the Disney timeline and one timeline is the old EU timeline. And then there are actually minor divergences in plot, even in the old EU, right? You have, you know, authors who wrote something before Lucas had confirmed something.
But
know,
I mean, I
just canon conflicts.
My headcanon for that is just that it's like historians, right? Like this is a long time ago.
Yeah.
So it's like there's conflicting reports and who knows what really happened.
Sure.
We can't ever know because time travel is not a thing and it will never be a thing. And that's one of the things I really like about Star Wars as a franchise is that there's no time travel.
Except that one.
Except for that one. Which, and because of how I'm linking it to the new canon, I'm just going to say that that didn't happen.
I think if Star Wars ever did explain it that way, it would be a huge ripoff, because that's exactly what Star Trek did when they rebooted their series. They're basically like, everything's new because somebody went back in time and reset the timeline.
Which just further points to the artistic bankruptcy of the
Hollywood.
Of Disney's Star Wars. So I like it. The next thing, and this also relates, this is going to be a lot of beating up on canon. So I'm sorry if you're a fan of the canon stuff. I don't want to yuck your yum, but this is sort of part of our brand is bashing on them to some degree because it's fun. So in Splinter of the Mind's Eye, which is the first canon novel, I think on an earlier discussion, I said that the first canon novel was
new canon. Yeah.
No.
Old canon.
I mean
old,
the first like, Legends novel, I should say.
Legends. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
I'm going to keep
confusing those. Because canon to you
yeah,
is
exactly.
the EU.
Yeah.
Canon to us, the true canon.
Was Splinter of the Mind's Eye. And I think I said it was some Lando Calrissian book before. So I'm not sure. I'm going to have to research that and figure out which is the first. But anyway, Splinter of the Mind's Eye, it's where they go to Mimban. I mentioned it in the episode. And Leia grabs Luke's lightsaber and duels Vader. And she does well. It sort of mimics that scene in, is it The Force Awakens, right, where Rey fights Darth Emo. What's his name?
Kylo Ren. Don't even use the Darth title.
Emo Ren.
Oh, that's right. He hasn't even earned the Darth title.
No, it's Emo Ren. That's
Emo like, Ren. Yeah. Right. So where she duels him and beats him. And Leia, Splinter of the Mind's Eye, Leia duels with Vader, and she doesn't beat him. Because that wouldn't make sense, because he's the most powerful Dark Lord of the Sith who ever existed. But she does really well. You would think Vader would just come in there and slice her head off in 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, but that's not what happens, right? They have a legit duel. She lands a lightsaber strike on his armor as well. She buys Luke enough time to escape. And this piece of evidence, combined with the fact that I also mentioned on Alderaan, she threw that laser ball and saved her babysitter. She was 1 year old at the time, and she's already manifesting that kind of force ability. So my theory is kind of, if Obi-Wan had taken Leia to Tatooine instead of Luke, that Leia would have been a way more powerful Jedi than Luke ever would have been, because I think Luke's powers didn't start manifesting till he was like 5 or 6. Is that accurate?
No, he was a toddler, I think, when his started manifesting too. But I
was
don't know
he
if they
won?
Get an exact age. No.
And what did he do?
He found some kind of power tool.
Exactly.
Behind something.
I think what Leia did. I mean, can you imagine a 1 year old picking up a ball and throwing it at a balcony and saving somebody's life? That's insane.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
I think they're twins, and they're the children of the most powerful Jedi that we know of, Anakin. So I hate quantifying power levels. I always hate like one-upmanship. Like
I love that.
Yoda is like, right, exactly. Yoda is more powerful than Mace Windu. Like there's an objective like skill factor and like, you know, you could do duels and you can objectively see when someone is better, like as it happens in the canon or in the story, any story, Disney or Legends. But I hate this like theoretical like one-upmanship of like, oh, you did this one thing that was slightly different than another. I don't know if that's a fair way to look at it. Particularly with Luke and Leia, because Leia does start training in the Force later too. And, you know, I do think the twins would have been like, you know what would have been better is if they trained both of them as Jedi to take down their father, and they probably would have done a better job.
That would have been very cool.
Yeah. But yeah, like it doesn't indicate anything that Leia is really, I would say she could be as powerful as Luke, but like the one-upmanship between the two, like how would you know?
Well, right? I would say that I made the point. I've made my point pretty persuasively that she was 1 year old and she did a very impressive thing for 1 year old.
I think Leia is certainly impressive in the Force, but there is pretty good evidence for like people have kind of different proficiencies. So you can't just say that one person is just like, maybe one person's like a more skilled lightsaber fighter. Where
right, exactly. Yeah, that's true.
Specialization of skills.
And Luke, like, what, he was like a very naturally good mechanic, you know, almost like Anakin was as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Like, but that was more like, it was like a force thing. Where that we don't know that necessarily Leia, but Leia was proficient with like strategy or whatever.
Yeah, and she was clearly a good fighter too. Like she did But how much of that was her upbringing versus force potential, right?
Like, yeah.
Let me reframe this then. If Leia had received the equivalent training as Luke, could she kick Luke's butt in a lightsaber duel?
Would Luke still just be a farm boy?
No, let's say they both trained with Yoda.
Like, it's hard to say.
Yeah, it is hard to say.
Like speculating on UFC fights, though.
I hate that. I hate
it. It's fun.
Just make them fight. Just make them fight. That's their profession. Yeah, I just don't see a situation where it would come up. But, I mean, like, to me, they're interchangeable in the sense that, like, if one failed, it's very clear that Yoda and Obi-Wan had her as a backup. They, you know, they talk about it themselves.
Right.
So she definitely, and she does exhibit that potential. And I think her own interest, too. Like, she cares about being a politician. I think she takes after her mother in that regard. Padme was very much involved in politics because she wanted to be. It was her interest. And in the same way, Leia, even though she has Jedi training that she does take on in the EU, it's not her main focus. She doesn't want to be a Jedi like Luke is. Makes it his life's goal.
And right? Like you're saying, Luke is very much disinterested in the political thing.
Right, exactly. And Leia,
he gets kind of like very depressed in the post-Galactic Civil War era and really withdraws from any sort of political activity.
Right. And part of that, I think, is a conflict of like his convictions versus the dirtiness of politics obviously entails. And Leia's obviously, as we can see even in her own bio, she's driven by that. That's what she's passionate about, right? She wants to be a political actor, be it as a rebel fighter or as a senator. So,
but what do you guys think about like her combat proficiency? Because when I was researching this episode, it really dawned on me that like, holy crap, Leia is a
lethal.
She is lethal. Like, she's a deadly force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. Like, they definitely explain it that, you know, she was trained in like state of the art use of weapons and hand to hand combat. Like, obviously that's not like given away in the movies, but they do.
It makes sense with her backstory.
Yeah, with her backstory, it does make sense.
I will.
It doesn't make sense at all, but okay.
I'll make a couple more points, sort of based on my martial arts experience and Leia's fighting. Is that in the comic books that I've read in the research for this episode, every time Leia gets into like a hand-to-hand scrap, like she usually wins or survives or whatever, but like she doesn't look good doing it. Like, she's scrambling, like the artists make like terror sort of evident in her eyes.
Yeah.
Whereas when Luke is in hand-to-hand combat, like he's literally doing, and we'll do a martial arts episode, he's literally doing karate and judo moves, but Leia's not. Like, she's just scrappy street fighting.
Is that a little inconsistent then with how they...
It is a little bit inconsistent because she's supposed to be trained in martial arts.
Right.
But I'll also say as a martial artist, this is something one of my first teachers told me, is that when you go into a real fight, you lose 99% of your skill. So that's just like, she might have been super
proficient,
but when the S hits the fan, she looks a lot less proficient than she is. And Luke, whatever he...
So actually, I do have an explanation where that could make sense. Luke is coming from combat from the place of a Jedi. So it's very centered. It's very Zen. So he's supposed to let go of fear and passion. Those things are not supposed to come into play. Versus Leia, who she sees combat as we see combat in an animalistic sense of survival, right? And then, yes, there's the conflict between, you can be taught anything in the whole world, but if you never use it in a practical sense, you know, the difference between you and me sparring, you know, in a safe environment versus brawling with someone on the street with a knife intent to kill you, like, it changes the dynamic of a fight, right?
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it. I'm buying your explanation there.
Yeah, and it's a lot of the combat training thing comes from her privileged upbringing. She's like, she reminds me of like almost a knight, like has this social status that like, you can take any class you want in the whole galaxy. You can, you know, you can learn to ride horses and do these things that other people don't have the ability to do. And then, and for her, it includes weapons training. And obviously in a hostile galaxy like Star Wars, that makes sense, right? You don't know what situation she might find herself in. And obviously it benefits her on top of that to be part of a guerrilla fighting force where she no doubt is expanding her training and like actively it's beneficial to her to look out, seek out that kind of training and expand on those skills too, right? And again, like the different nature of combat, again, the difference between shooting a guy, you know, from 100 meters away or fighting a guy face to face who, you know, is intent on killing you. It's very different, right?
And one final note about Leia's combat proficiency, and I'll reveal a little bit about myself to our viewers. I'm calling you listeners. Viewers.
Listeners.
As an homage to The Greatest Generation, you're our viewers. So I used to be an axe-throwing coach for several years. And in Splinter of the Mind's Eye, I forget what exactly happened, but one of the red-skinned Mimbinis like steals something that Luke and Leia needed, but he left a stone axe on the ground. And so as he's running away, Leia picks up this axe and dummies the Mimbinis guy from like 20 meters away. And I can tell you as an axe-throwing coach, axe-throwing isn't very hard to do, but you do need to learn a little bit of technique. Like I can take anybody who hasn't thrown an axe and I'll have you throwing bullseyes at 10 meters pretty consistently. But as far as we know, this is the first time Leia ever touched a throwing axe and she dummies this guy. I find that very impressive, especially because he was a moving target.
Yeah, I mean, there's also an element of force assistance.
I just think it's cool, and I wanted to point it out.
This instance, yeah.
I think one thing I found a little bit hard to believe was Leia besting Vader in a...
Weird.
What was it, a lightsaber fight?
It was a lightsaber duel, yeah.
That just seems a little far-fetched to me. I'm not sure exactly where that story comes from.
It's from Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Oh, it is? Yeah. Okay.
I've got some comic book panels, so I'll put those in our Pinterest account at some point.
It is interesting. I don't know how they explain how she defeats
him.
They
didn't.
Yeah, it seems a little far-fetched.
To be fair, she didn't defeat him. She just defended...
Okay.
Luke long enough until Luke because Luke was buried under a pile of rubble at the time.
Gotcha. Yeah,
so she just fought Vader off, but I mean, we know how powerful Vader is. Like, he should have just been able to kill her immediately. Yeah, right.
Like, he should have been able to like crush her skull with his force.
Yeah
I'm gonna go ahead and just chalk that up to
lazy writing,
half plot armor, half just like the force again. Like, I hate to use it as a crutch,
but that's kind of nice about the Star Wars universe is you can always explain
something away.
Deus Ex Machina isn't a hack tool for Star Wars, I think, because
not if you plan for it.
Because the force is established as being the Deus Ex Machina, right?
Yeah. So I mean, as long as she didn't beat him out, right, and it's just more holding her ground, I can buy that.
No, and
more
again,
than...
and again, in like the drawings and stuff, you can see like she's not comfortable. She's struggling. Vader has the advantage, but she's doing well considering.
And even across the board for like ability, people are portrayed so inconsistently in Star Wars. It's really hard to, and it bothers me. It does, because I do like to have definitive demarcations.
Yeah,
like X is the best at Y, right?
Yeah.
But like, especially for Vader too, like he, you know, blows through Jedi masters who are supposed to be these like powerful lightsaber duelists like nothing, and then you're like, oh cool, like Vader's obviously super powerful, and then he struggles to kill like some Padawan somewhere, right? And it's like, okay, now I'm getting lost on where the lines are. Now, it could be, I mean, in real life too, people have always potential, there's always chance as factors.
Yeah, and again, I'll bring in my martial arts experience with that, is like there's always a chance in a fight, no matter how skilled and outmatched you are, that you're just going to get a lucky shot on a guy's chin and he goes down.
Yeah.
Like there's this famous UFC fight with Mirko Krokop versus Gabriel Gonzaga.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Krokop was famous for having the best, deadliest head kicks in the world and being not a very good grappler. And Gonzaga was the opposite. Great grappler, not a good kickboxer. He knocked Krokop out with a head kick and it was like you thought Krokop was dead for a little bit. And it was just a lucky shot, basically. And that can always happen.
And then
in
there
a
fight. Are, even like you said, there are also factors in that. One's good at grappling, one's good at kickboxing. So had he taken him to the ground, it would have changed the nature of the fight, right? The same way with, you know, someone's more proficient with the force, someone's more proficient with the lightsaber, someone, you know, there are all these variables that I don't know. There's some instances where it's very clear where someone is better, but you always got to leave those options for chance and for other factors that are X factors.
All right. So I called Leia a terrorist several times. Part of that was just because I think it's always funny to make to me. I'm sort of an iconoclastic person, and I like to paint heroes as villains and villains as heroes because that's just a fun way to go about life. So is Leia a terrorist? Is she a freedom fighter? What's the difference?
I think in real life, that's a very blurry line. In Leia's case, and in the Rebellion's case in general, I think there's something to be said for how you pick your targets. For the most part, Rebels look like they try to minimize collateral damage, to their credit.
I can't think of any specific examples, but I think there are some pretty big instances of the Rebels, like, it wasn't really part of their objective, but they ended up like
in terms of like modern militaries, it rarely is part of the objective.
But like they wiped out like some cities or something like that
in the process of achieving their goals. Yeah. I mean, that's the very definition of a collateral damage, right? And it does happen. And there are sects of the Rebellion. The thing about the Rebellion, and they're called the Rebel Alliance, is they're actually like a bunch of fractured groups coming together for the objective, the broader goal.
Yeah. And a lot of the texts that are out there in that time between episode 3 and 4, they really get into that about how diverse the Rebels are, because it's really just isolated pockets of resistance on individual worlds.
Exactly. And they're trying to come under a unified banner because obviously it helps to be part of a grander goal. I think a lot of that comes from the French Resistance, which are surprisingly fractured, and they even hated each other and would like sabotage each other's work and get each other killed.
To the guillotine with you.
Yeah, exactly. And they had every fraction of, you had like monarchists and you had anarchists and you had, you know, they're all working for the general goal of liberating France, but they also had political views that were antithetical to each other. And so in the Rebel Alliance, you have probably the similar spectrum of ideologies. So some do probably engage, and some are, like mentioned in past episodes, people like Saul Guerrera. We're very callous towards civilian casualties and collateral damage. So in those cases, and if you see them, you know, under the same banner as the Rebel Alliance, to you, they're just a bunch of terrorists, right? They didn't care about your family when they bombed X target or...
Right.
And even if Leia didn't employ terrorist tactics herself, it could be assumed that she was sort of adjacent to people who would do that.
Right.
Yeah, and sort of how I look at what defines a terrorist is you're doing quote-unquote illegitimate violence for a political reason. And by illegitimate, I mean you're part of a society. That society has laws against violence, obviously, and you're breaking those laws for your political
objective.
And that's sort of terrorism. But I think there's another perspective of terrorism, which I guess under this makes my contention that she's a terrorist inaccurate, that terrorism is propaganda, right? It's not really about achieving a strategic objective. Like, you're not trying to gain the control of a city or anything. You're trying to spread a specific propaganda message.
Yeah, it's like to instill fear or whatever.
Yeah, and that's not really what the Rebel Alliance was doing.
It is, though, because their message was democracy. Their message was anti-authoritarian.
Their objectives were always, like, it seemed like always military and tactical rather than propaganda.
No, there are definitely elements. The whole concept of hope, right? They drive home as an ideological position.
A new.
Right. That's why the movie is
a
named,
new optimistic vision for the future. That's what it was called, right?
Yes.
A new optimistic vision for the future.
I'd probably presume, though, that it would be a kind of a both and. Many of their operations would have like a more political symbolism to it as well as a strategic reason.
The other thing too to bring up in the terrorist discussion is the legitimacy of government, right? And it's a super murky area when you say, like, well, you know, the empire was formed under illegitimate means. It's not the legitimate government, therefore we're the legitimate government. The rebels are the legitimate government. They're the old republic trying to regain legitimacy through force. If you see it that way, or the other way is, no, you voted for the Imperial Senate. You wanted an empire, and they are the legitimate government, and these upstarts are terrorists, right, in your eyes. You wanted order after the Clone Wars. Your world was ravaged by the instability of the Republic. You wanted a safe and secure empire. You invite stormtroopers to your planet. These terrorists are blowing stuff up all over. Like, yeah.
So our conclusion, it sounds like, is Leia was both a terrorist and a freedom fighter. Accurate?
Oh, as much as I want to say that the Empire did nothing wrong, I don't know. I honestly,
this is going to be an episode in season two, by the way, Christian, about how insanely wrong you are about the Empire doing nothing wrong. They did everything wrong.
Sure. We'll at least save that discussion for later. I'm a huge Imperial fanboy. Like, I love the Empire. I love Darth Vader. But I'd have to look into case by case basis of all Rebel operations and kind of see what the results were. And, you know, were they attacking legitimate, viable military targets all the time? What was, you know, the perspective on collateral damage, things like that?
Yeah, and was okay, for instance, was the destruction of Alderaan, was that a terrorist attack, or was that like more just a strategic?
Again, I would never I would actually never consider a military action by a government to be a terrorist action. It's horribly wrong and they shouldn't do it, but it's not a terrorist action.
I mean, again, it goes back to the definition of terrorism.
Yeah. Right?
And a lot of people would argue the exact opposite. A lot of people see governments as terrorist actors. And,
right.
You know, I think you have to deal with things with a fair objective. Was the objective to instill fear? A government can definitely act to instill
fear. We'll get into this at some point, maybe in an episode about the Empire. There's actually something called the Tarkin Doctrine.
Yes.
Which is terrorism. He's like, we don't have to have stormtroopers on every planet.
Yeah.
We can just show everybody that we can come to their home and blow them up, and everything that they
love
is within our power to snap our fingers and make it go away, and they'll be in line.
And in the cultural milieu of something like a Tarkin Doctrine, you could see characters like Leia. Obviously, that would give context to her own philosophy around the Empire and why she thinks they're so terrible, right? Is because of those brutal tactics that they use. And you could see why people would be willing to go to extremes in order to fight the Empire.
But I think also, I'm not 100% sure that the Empire, aside from slavery, obviously, didn't start getting really bad until the dissolution of the Senate, right?
And you could also argue that...
But the rebels were very active before that.
Yeah, and that is also the counter-argument. And again, in real world terms, this gets super murky.
It's kind of like the Taliban, right? How, like, when they were fighting the Soviet Union...
Yeah, they're the good guys.
They were freedom fighters.
Yeah, but when they're attacking you, they're the bad guys.
And this is sort of the opposite, right? They're the bad guys first, and then the Empire got really evil, and now they're the good guys.
Right, and that's the other thing is, I was going to say, did the Empire become more oppressive because of rebels, right? Did the rebellion kind of create the terror tactic because they're like, you know what, these guys are running around blowing things up. We need to stop it. We need to, you know, create more stringent controls, right? So again, it can be super murky. And I like that personally. I like that gray area of, like, you can pick your side almost.
But who escalated the violence first, right?
Sure, and that's always a question, right? Well, you did X. Well, we did Y. Well, you know, and how many years do you go back? How far do you go back with it?
So, and that's the same with all, like, even real world conflicts, right? Yes. It's sort of the problem.
Yeah, and then at what stage do you legitimize violence, right?
Yeah.
So as I always like to try to do in my sort of debating type conversations, is I like to try to summarize what the other side is saying. So from a certain point of view, the rebels are both terrorists and freedom fighters.
Yeah, I think that's an accurate way to land.
All right, guys. Mm-hmm. So follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and do it for the glory of the Empire.
Yeah, feel free to message us, reach out to us, let us know what you like, what you don't like. Give us a 5-star rating and review. Anything to add to that?
I'm just curious to see people's opinions.
Yeah. We totally want to hear from the community and what they think about this episode and other episodes as well.
Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder.
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to give the show a 5-star rating and review, and give us a follow on social media. This episode was produced and edited by me, Jordan Swaim, written and directed by Christian Lutz and Sam Swaim. All original music was scored and recorded by my music project. Farewell to Shadowland.
Thanks for flying with us. Jordan here. Just wanted to let everyone know what's happening here at the Star Lores Podcast. Star Lores is now on Discord. If you would like to join the Star Lores Cantina Discord server, you can find a link in the description or on any of our social media accounts. Reach out with a DM or email. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter by searching the Star Lores Podcast. Go ahead and give our page a like and send us a message. You can also email at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Send us your fan art, Star Wars collections, or fan fictions, and you may even get a feature on one of our pages or even the show. Don't be afraid to offer corrections or add to any of the topics that we discuss on the show. We are also on Patreon, so if you want to help us pay the bills, as well as get a few awesome perks like bonus episodes, access to the private Facebook group, or the VIP section of the Discord server, head on over to patreon.com/StarLores and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And finally, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher app or YouTube, as well as sending us a 5-star review on iTunes. This really helps us reach a wider audience. Enjoy the rest of the show.